Lucian said. Let's get through the wedding, then the tithe next month, and then we can see about the rest.
I've given him time, I said. I can't stay cooped up in the house forever.
He knows that. He doesn't say it, but he knows it. Trust me. You will forgive him if his family's own slaughter keeps him from being so liberal with your safety. He's lost those he cares for too many times. We all have.
Every word was like fuel adding to the simmering pit in my gut. I don't want to marry a high lord. I just want to marry him.
One doesn't exist without the other. He is what he is. He will always, always seek to protect you, whether you like it or not. Talk to him about it. Really talk to him, Feyre. You'll figure it out.
Our gazes met. A muscle feathered in Lucian's jaw.
Don't ask me to pick.
But you're deliberately not telling me things.
He is my High Lord. His word is law. We have this one chance, Feyre, to rebuild and make the world as it should be. I will not begin that new world by breaking his trust. Even if you...
Even if I what? His face paled, and he stroked a hand down the mare's cobweb-colored mane.
I was forced to watch as my father butchered the female I loved. My brothers forced me to watch.
My heart tightened for him, for the pain that haunted him.
There was no magic spell, no miracle to bring her back. There were no gathered high lords to resurrect her. I watched and she died, and I will never forget that moment when I heard her heart stop beating.
My eyes burned.
Tamlin got what I didn't,
Lucian said softly, his breathing ragged.
We all heard your neck break, but you got to come back. And I doubt that he will ever forget that sound either, and he will do everything in his power to protect you from that danger again, even if it means keeping secrets, even if it means sticking to rules you don't like. In this, he will not bend. So don't ask him to. Not yet.
I had no words in my head, my heart. Giving Tamlin time, letting him adjust, it was the least I could do. The clamor of construction overtook the chittering of forest birds long before we set foot in the village. Hammers on nails, people barking orders, livestock braying. We cleared the woods to find a village halfway toward being built. Pretty little buildings of stone and wood, makeshift structures over the supplies and livestock. The only things that seemed absolutely finished were the large well in the center of the town and what looked to be a tavern. Sometimes, the normalcy of Prithian, the utter similarities between it and the mortal lands, still surprised me. I might as well have been in my own village back home. A much nicer, newer village, but the layout, the focal points, all the same. And I felt like just as much of an outsider when Lucian and I rode into the heart of the chaos and everyone paused their laboring or selling or milling about to look at us. At me. Like a ripple of silence, the sounds of activity died in even the farthest reaches of the village.
Feyre, Cursebreaker,
someone whispered.
Well, that was a new name.
I was grateful for the long sleeves of my riding habit and the matching gloves I'd tugged on before we'd entered the village border. Lucian pulled up his mare to a high fey male who looked like he was in charge of building a house bordering the well fountain.
We came to see if any help was needed, he said,
loud enough for everyone to hear.
Our services are yours for the day.
The male blanched.
Gratitude, my lord, but none is needed.
His eyes gobbled me up, widening.
The debt is paid.
The sweat on my palms felt thicker, warmer. My mare stomped a hoof on the ruddy dirt street.
Please,
Lucian said, bowing his head gracefully. The effort to rebuild is our burden to share. It would be our honor. The male shook his head.
The debt is paid.
And so it went, at every place we stopped in the village, Lucian dismounting, asking to help, and polite, reverent rejections. Within 20 minutes, we were already riding back into the shadows and rustle of the woods.
Did he let you take me today?
I said hoarsely, so that I'd stop asking to help rebuild.
No. I decided to take you myself, for that exact reason. They don't want or need your help. Your presence is a distraction and a reminder of what they went through.
I flinched. They weren't under the mountain, though. I recognized none of them. Lucian shuddered.
No. Amarantha had camps for them. The nobles and favored fairies were allowed to dwell under the mountain, but if the people of a court weren't working to bring in goods and food, they were locked in camps in a network of tunnels beneath the mountain. Thousands of them, crammed into chambers and tunnels with no light, no air, for 50 years.
No one ever said it was forbidden to speak of it.
Some of them went mad. Started preying on the others when Amarantha forgot to order her guards to feed them. Some formed bands that prowled the camps and did.
He rubbed his brows with a thumb and forefinger.
They did horrible things. Right now they're trying to remember what it is to be normal. How to live.
Bile burned my throat. But this wedding? Yes. Perhaps it would be the start of that healing. Still, a blanket seemed to smother my senses, drowning out sound, taste, feeling.
I know you wanted to help, Lucian offered. I'm sorry.
So was I. The vastness of my now unending existence yawned open before me. I let it swallow me whole. Chapter 4. A few days before the wedding ceremony, guests began arriving, and I was grateful that I'd never be High Lady, never be Tamlin's equal in responsibility and power. A small, forgotten part of me roared and screamed at that, but dinner after dinner, luncheons and picnics and hunts. I was introduced and passed around, and my face hurt from the smile I kept plastered there day and night. I began looking forward to the wedding just knowing that once it was over, I wouldn't have to be pleasant or talk to anyone or do anything for a week, a month, a year. Tamlin endured it all, in that quiet, near feral way of his, and told me again and again that the parties were a way to introduce me to his court, to give his people something to celebrate. He assured me that he hated the gatherings as much as I did, and that Lucian was the only one who really enjoyed himself. But I caught Tamlin grinning sometimes, and truthfully he deserved it, had earned it, and these people deserved it too. So I weathered it, clinging to Ianthe when Tamlin wasn't at my side, or, if they were together, letting the two of them lead conversations while I counted down the hours until everyone would leave.
"You should head to bed,"
Ianthe said, both of us watching the assembled revelers packing the great hall. I'd spotted her by the open door 30 minutes ago, and was grateful for the excuse to leave the gaggle of Tamlin's friends I'd been stuck talking to. Or not talking to. Either they outright stared at me, or they tried so damn hard to come up with common topics. Hunting, mostly. Conversation usually stalled after 3 minutes.
I have another hour before I need to sleep, I said. Ianthe was in her usual pale robe, hood up, and that circlet of silver with its blue stone atop it.
High Fey males eyed her as they meandered past where we stood, by the wood-paneled wall near the main doors. Either from awe or lust, or perhaps both, their gazes occasionally snagging on me. I knew the wide eyes had nothing to do with my bright green gown or pretty face, fairly bland compared to Ianthe's. I tried to ignore them.
Are you ready for tomorrow? Is there anything I can do for you?
Ianthe sipped from her glass of sparkling wine. The gown I wore tonight was a gift from her, actually. Spring court green, she'd called it. Alice had merely lingered while I dressed, unnervingly silent, letting Ianthe claim her usual duties.
I'm fine.
I'd already contemplated how pathetic it would be if I asked her to permanently stay after the wedding. If I revealed that I dreaded her leaving me to this court, these people, until Ninsar, a minor spring holiday to celebrate the end of seeding the fields and to pass out the first flower clippings of the season. Months and months from now. Even having her live at her own temple felt too removed. Two males that had circled past twice already finally worked up the courage to approach us. Her. I leaned against the wall, the wood digging into my back as they flanked Ianthe. Handsome, in the way that most of them were handsome, armed with weapons that marked them as two of the High Fae who guarded Tamlin's lands. Perhaps they even worked under Ianthe's father.
Priestess, one said, bowing deep.
By now I'd become accustomed to people kissing her silver rings and beseeching her for prayers for themselves, their families, or their lovers. Ianthe received it all without that beautiful face shifting in the slightest.
Braun, she said to the one on her left, brown-haired and tall.
And Heart, she said to the one on her right, black-haired and built a bit more powerfully than his friend.
She gave a coy, pretty tilt of her lips that I'd learned meant she was now on the hunt for nighttime companionship.
I haven't seen you two troublemakers in a while.
They parried with flirtatious comments, until the two males began glancing my way.
Oh,
Ianthe said, hood shifting as she turned.
Allow me to introduce Lady Feyre.
She lowered her eyes, angling her head in a deep nod.
Savior of Prithian.
We know.
Heart said quietly, bowing with his friend at the waist.
We were under the mountain with you.
I managed to incline my head a bit as they straightened.
Congratulations on tomorrow, Braun said, grinning. A fitting end, eh?
A fitting end would have been me in a grave burning in hell.
The cauldron, Ianthe said, has blessed all of us with such a union.
The males murmured their agreement, bowing their heads again. I ignored it.
I have to say, Braun went on, that trial with the Midgard worm, brilliant. One of the most brilliant things I ever saw.
It was an effort not to push myself wholly flat against the wall, not to think about the reek of that mud, the gnashing of those flesh-shredding teeth bearing down upon me.
Thank you. Oh, it sounded terrible, Ianthe said, stepping closer as she noted I was no longer wearing that bland smile. She put a hand on my arm. Such bravery is awe-inspiring.
I was grateful. So pathetically grateful for the steadying touch, for the squeeze. I knew then that she'd inspire hordes of young Fey females to join her order. Not for worshipping their mother and cauldron, but to learn how she lived, how she could shine so brightly and love herself, move from male to male as if they were dishes at a banquet.
We missed the hunt the other day,
Hart said casually.
So we haven't had a chance to see your talents up close, but I think the High Lord will be stationing us near the estate next month. It'd be an honor to ride with you.
Tamlin wouldn't allow me out with them in 1,000 years, and I had no desire to tell them that I had no interest in ever using a bow and arrow again, or hunting anything at all. The hunt I'd been dragged on 2 days ago had almost been too much. Even with everyone watching me, I hadn't drawn an arrow. They were still waiting for a reply, so I said, "The honor would be mine."
"Does my father have you two on duty tomorrow, or will you be attending the ceremony?"
Ianthe said, putting a distracting hand on Bronn's arm. Precisely why I sought her out at events. Bronn answered her, but Hart's eyes lingered on me, on my crossed arms, on my tattooed fingers. He said,
"Have you heard from the High Lord at all?"
Ianthe stiffened, and Bronn immediately cut his gaze toward my inked flesh. "No," I said, holding Hart's gaze.
"He's probably running scared now that Tamlin's got his powers back."
"Then you don't know Rhysand very well at all." Hart blinked, and even Ianthe kept silent. It was probably the most assertive thing I'd said to anyone during these parties.
"Well, we'll take care of him if need be," Hart said, shifting on his feet as I continued to hold his gaze, not bothering to soften my expression.
Ianthe said to him, to me,
"The High Priestesses are taking care of it. We will not allow our savior to be treated so ill."
I schooled my face into neutrality. Was that why Tamlin had initially sought out Ianthe? To make an alliance? My chest tightened a bit. I turned to her.
"I'm going up. Tell Tamlin I'll see him tomorrow."
Tomorrow, because tonight, Ianthe had told me, we'd spend apart, as dictated by their long-held traditions. Ianthe kissed my cheek, her hood shielding me from the room for a heartbeat.
"I'm at your disposal, lady. Send word if you need anything."
I wouldn't, but I nodded. As I slipped from the room, I peered toward the front, where Tamlin and Lucien were surrounded by a circle of high fey males and females. Perhaps not as refined as some of the others, but they had the look of people who had been together a long time, fought at each other's sides. Tamlin's friends. He'd introduced me to them, and I'd immediately forgotten their names. I hadn't tried to learn them again. Tamlin tipped his head back and laughed, the others howling with him. I left before he could spot me, easing through the crowded halls until I was in the dim, empty upstairs of the residential wing. Alone in my bedroom, I realized I couldn't remember the last time I'd truly laughed.
The ceiling pushed down, the large, blunt spikes so hot I could see the heat rippling off them even from where I was chained to the floor. Chained because I was illiterate and couldn't read the riddle written on the wall, and Amarantha was glad to let me be impaled. Closer and closer. There was no one coming to save me from this horrible death. It had hurt. It'd hurt and be slow, and I'd cry. I might even cry for my mother, who had never cared for me anyway. I might beg her to save me.
My limbs flailed as I shot upright in bed, yanking against invisible chains. I would have lurched for the bathing room had my legs and arms not shook so badly. Had I been able to breathe. I scanned the bedroom, shuddering. Real. This was real. The horrors, those were nightmares. I was out. I was alive. I was safe. A night breeze floated through the open windows, ruffling my hair, drying the cold sweat on me, The dark sky beckoned, the stars so dim and small, like speckles of frost.
Braun had sounded as if watching my encounter with the Midgard worm was a sporting match, as if I hadn't been one mistake away from being devoured whole and my bones spat out. Savior and jester, apparently. I stumbled to the open window and pushed it wider, clearing my view of the star-flecked darkness. I rested my head against the wall, savoring the cool stones. In a few hours, I'd be married. I'd have my happy ending, whether I deserved it or not. But this land, these people, they would have their happy ending too. The first few steps toward healing, toward peace. And then things would be fine. Then I'd be fine. I really, truly hated my wedding gown. It was a monstrosity of tulle and chiffon and gossamer, so unlike the loose gowns I usually wore. The bodice fitted, the neckline curved to plump my breasts, and the skirts? The skirts were a sparkling tent, practically floating in the balmy spring air. No wonder Tamlin had laughed. Even Alice, as she'd dressed me, had hummed to herself but said nothing. Most likely because Ianthe had personally selected the gown to complement whatever tale she'd weave today. The legend she'd proclaimed to the world. I might have dealt with it all if it weren't for the puffy capped sleeves, so big I could almost see them glinting from the periphery of my vision. My hair had been curled, half up, half down, entwined with pearls and jewels, and the cauldron knew what, and it had taken all my self-control to keep from cringing at the mirror before descending the sweeping stairs into the main hall. My dress hissed and swished with each step. Beyond the shut patio doors where I paused, the garden had been bedecked in ribbons and lanterns in shades of cream, blush, and sky blue. 300 chairs were assembled in the largest courtyard, each seat occupied by Tamlin's court. I'd make my way down the main aisle, enduring their stares, before I reached the dais at the other end, where Tamlin would be waiting. Then Ianthe would sanction and bless our union right before sundown, as a representative of all 12 High Priestesses. She'd hinted that they'd pushed to be present, but through whatever cunning she'd managed to keep the other 11 away, either to claim the attention for herself or to spare me from being hounded by the pack of them, I couldn't tell. Perhaps both. My mouth went paper dry as Alice fluffed out the sparkling train of my gown in the shadow of the garden doors. Silk and gossamer rustled and sighed, and I gripped the pale bouquet in my gloved hands, nearly snapping the stems. Elbow-length silk gloves, to hide the markings. Ianthe had delivered them herself this morning in a velvet-lined box. "Don't be nervous," Alice clucked, her tree-bark skin rich and flushed in the honey-gold evening light. "I'm not," I rasped. "You're fidgeting like my youngest nephew during a haircut." She finished fussing over my dress, shooing away some servants who'd come to spy on me before the ceremony. I pretended I didn't see them, or the glittering, sunset-gilded crowd seated in the courtyard ahead, and toyed with some invisible fleck of dust on my skirts. "You look beautiful," Alice said quietly. I was fairly certain her thoughts on the dress were the same as my own, but I believed her.
"Thank you."
"And you sound like you're going to your funeral." I plastered a grin on my face. Alice rolled her eyes. But she nudged me toward the doors as they opened on some immortal wind, lilting music streaming in. "It'll be over faster than you can blink," she promised, and gently pushed me into the last of the sunlight. 300 people rose to their feet and pivoted toward me.
Not since my last trial had so many gathered to watch me, judge me. All in finery so similar to what they'd worn under the mountain. Their faces blurred, melded. Alice coughed from the shadows of the house, and I remembered to start walking, to look toward the dais, at Tamlin. The breath knocked from me, and it was an effort to keep going down the stairs, to keep my knees from buckling. He was resplendent, in a tunic of green and gold, a crown of burnished laurel leaves gleaming on his head. He'd loosened the grip on his glamour, letting that immortal light and beauty shine through, for me. My vision narrowed on him, on my High Lord, his wide eyes glistening as I stepped onto the soft grass, white rose petals scattered down it. And red ones. Like drops of blood amongst the white, red petals had been sprayed across the path ahead. I forced my gaze up to Tamlin, his shoulders back, head high. So unaware of the true extent of how broken and dark I was inside. How unfit I was to be clothed in white when my hands were so filthy. Everyone else was thinking it. They had to be. Every step was too fast, propelling me toward the dais and Tamlin, and toward Ianthe, clothed in dark blue robes tonight, beaming beneath that hood and silver crown. As if I were good. As if I hadn't murdered two of their kind. I was a murderer and a liar. A cluster of red petals loomed ahead, just like that Fey Ute's blood had pooled at my feet. 10 steps from the dais, at the edge of that splatter of red, I slowed. Then stopped. Everyone was watching. Exactly as they had when I'd nearly died, spectators to my torment. Tamlin extended a broad hand, brows narrowing slightly. My heart beat so fast. Too fast. I was gonna vomit. Right over those rose petals, right over the grass and ribbons trailing into the aisle from the chairs flanking it. And between my skin and bones, something thrummed and pounded, rising and pushing, lashing through my blood. So many eyes, too many eyes pressed on me, witnesses to every crime I'd committed, every humiliation. I don't know why I'd even bothered to wear gloves, why I'd let Ianthe convince me. The fading sun was too hot, the garden too hedged in. As inescapable as the vow I was about to make, binding me to him forever, shackling him to my broken and weary soul. The thing inside me was roiling now, my body shaking with the building force of it as it hunted for a way out. Forever. I would never get better, never get free of myself, of that dungeon where I'd spent 3 months.
Feyre,
Tamlin said, his hand steady as he continued to reach for mine. The sun sank past the lip of the western garden wall. Shadows pooled, chilling the air. If I turned away, they'd start talking, but I couldn't make the last few steps. Couldn't. I was going to fall apart, right there, right then, and they'd see precisely how ruined I was.
Help me. Help me. Help me.
I begged someone. Anyone. Begged Lucian, standing in the front row, his metal eye fixed on me. Begged Ianthe, face serene and patient and lovely within that hood.
Save me, please. Save me. Get me out. End this.
Tamlin took a step toward me, concern shading those eyes. I retreated a step.
No.
Tamlin's mouth tightened. The crowd murmured. Silk streamers laden with globes of gold phalite twinkled into life above and around us. Ianthe said smoothly, "Come, bride, and be joined with your true love. Come, bride, and let good triumph at last."
Good. I was not good. I was nothing. And my soul, my eternal soul, was damned. I tried to get my traitorous lungs to draw air so I could voice the word, no. No. But I didn't have to say it.
Thunder cracked behind me, as if two boulders had been hurled against each other. People screamed, falling back, a few vanishing outright as darkness erupted. I whirled, and through the night, drifting away like smoke on a wind, I found Rhysand straightening the lapels of his black jacket. "Hello, Feyre darling," he purred.
Chapter 5.
I shouldn't have been surprised. Not when Rhysand liked to make a spectacle of everything, and found pissing off Tamlin to be an art form. But there he was. Rhysand, High Lord of the Night Court, now stood beside me, darkness leaking from him like ink in water. He angled his head, his blue-black hair shifting with the movement. Those violet eyes sparkled in the golden phalite as they remained fixed on Tamlin, as he held up a hand to where Tamlin and Lucian and their sentries had their swords half-drawn, sizing up how to get me out of the way, how to bring him down. But at the lift of that hand, they froze. Ianthe, however, was backing away slowly, face drained of color.
"What a pretty little wedding," Rhysand said, stuffing his hands into his pockets as those many swords remained in their sheaths.
The remaining crowd was pressing back, some climbing over seats to get away. Rhys looked me over slowly and clicked his tongue at my silk gloves. Whatever had been building beneath my skin went still and cold.
"Get the hell out," growled Tamlin, stalking toward us, claws ripped from his knuckles.
Rhys clicked his tongue again. "Oh, I don't think so. Not when I need to call in my bargain with Feyre, darling."
My stomach hollowed out.
"No, no, not now. You try to break the bargain, and you know what will happen," Rhys went on, chuckling a bit at the crowd still falling over themselves to get away from him.
He jerked his chin toward me.
"I gave you 3 months of freedom. You could at least look happy to see me." I was shaking too badly to say anything. Rhys's eyes flickered with distaste. The expression was gone when he faced Tamlin again.
"I'll be taking her now."
"Don't you dare," Tamlin snarled.
Behind him, the dais was empty. Ianthe had vanished entirely, along with most of those in attendance.
"Was I interrupting? I thought it was over."
Rhys gave me a smile dripping with venom. He knew, through that bond, through whatever magic was between us, he'd known I was about to say no.
"At least, Feyre seemed to think so."
Tamlin snarled.
"Let us finish the ceremony."
"Your High Priestess," Rhys said, "seems to think it's over too." Tamlin stiffened as he looked over his shoulder to find the altar empty. When he faced us again, the claws had eased halfway back into his hands.
"Rhysand, I'm in no mood to bargain," Rhys said. "Even though I could work it to my advantage, I'm sure."
I jolted at the caress of his hand on my elbow.
"Let's go."
I didn't move.
"Tamlin," I breathed.
Tamlin took a single step toward me,
his golden face turning sallow, but remained focused on Rhys.
Name your price.
Don't bother, Rhys crooned, linking elbows with me. Every spot of contact was abhorrent, unbearable. He'd take me back to the Night Court, the place Amarantha had supposedly modeled Under the Mountain after, full of depravity and torture and death.
Tamlin, please.
Such dramatics,
Rhysand said, tugging me closer. But Tamlin didn't move, and those claws were wholly replaced by smooth skin. He fixed his gaze on Rhys, his lips pulling back in a snarl.
If you hurt her...
I know, Rhysand drawled. I'll return her in a week.
No.
No, Tamlin couldn't be making those kinds of threats. Not when they meant he was letting me go. Even Lucian was gaping at Tamlin, his face white with fury and shock.
Rhys released my elbow, only to slip a hand around my waist, pressing me into his side as he whispered in my ear,
"Hold on."
Then darkness roared, a wind tearing me this way and that, the ground falling away beneath me, the world gone around me. Only Rhys remained, and I hated him as I clung to him. I hated him with my entire heart.
Then the darkness vanished. I smelled jasmine first, then saw stars. A sea of stars flickering beyond glowing pillars of moonstone that framed the sweeping view of endless snow-capped mountains.
Welcome to the Night Court, was all Rhys said.
It was the most beautiful place I'd ever seen. Whatever building we were in had been perched atop one of the gray-stoned mountains. The hall around us was open to the elements. No windows to be found, just towering pillars and gossamer curtains swaying in that jasmine-scented breeze.
It must be some magic to keep the air warm in the dead of winter. Not to mention the altitude or the snow coating the mountains, mighty winds sending veils of it drifting off the peaks like wandering mist. Little seating, dining, and work areas dotted the hall, sectioned off with those curtains or lush plants or thick rugs scattered over the moonstone floor. A few balls of light bobbed on the breeze, along with colored glass lanterns dangling from the arches of the ceiling. Not a scream, not a shout, not a plea to be heard. Behind me, a wall of white marble arose, broken occasionally by open doorways leading into dim stairwells. The rest of the Night Court had to be through there. No wonder I couldn't hear anyone screaming if they were all inside.
This is my private residence, Rhys said casually.
His skin was darker than I'd remembered. Golden now, rather than pale. Pale from being locked under the mountain for 50 years. I scanned him, searching for any sign of the massive, membranous wings, the ones he'd admitted he loved flying with. But there was none. Just the male, smirking at me. And that all-too-familiar expression.
How dare you, Rhys snorted. I certainly missed that look on your face.
He stalked closer, his movements feline, those violet eyes turning subdued, lethal.
You're welcome, you know.
For what? Rhys paused less than a foot away, sliding his hands into his pockets. The night didn't seem to ripple from him here, and he appeared, despite his perfection, almost normal.
For saving you when asked.
I stiffened. I didn't ask for anything.
His stare dipped to my left hand.
He gave no warning as he gripped my arm, snarling softly, and tore off the glove.
His touch was like a brand, and I flinched, yielding a step, but he held firm until he'd gotten both gloves off.
I heard you begging someone, anyone, to rescue you, to get you out. I heard you say no.
I didn't say anything.
He turned my bare hand over, his hold tightening as he examined the eye he'd tattooed. He tapped the pupil. Once, twice.
I heard it loud and clear.
I wrenched my hand away. Take me back, now! I didn't want to be stolen away.
He shrugged.
What better time to take you here? Maybe Tamlin didn't notice you were about to reject him in front of his entire court. Maybe you can now simply blame it on me.
You're a bastard. You made it clear enough that I had reservations.
Such gratitude as always.
I struggled to get down a single deep breath. What do you want from me?
Want? I want you to say thank you, first of all. Then I want you to take off that hideous dress. You look...
His mouth cut a cruel line. You look exactly like the doe-eyed damsel he and that simpering priestess want you to be.
You don't know anything about me, or us.
Rhys gave me a knowing smile.
Does Tamlin?
Does he ever ask you why you hurl your guts up every night, or why you can't go into certain rooms or see certain colors?
I froze. He might as well have stripped me naked.
Get the hell out of my head!
Tamlin had horrors of his own to endure, to face down.
Likewise.
He stalked a few steps away. You think I enjoy being awoken every night by visions of you puking? You sending everything right down that bond? And I don't appreciate having a front row seat when I'm trying to sleep.
Prick.
Another chuckle. But I wouldn't ask about what he meant, about the bond between us. I wouldn't give him the satisfaction of looking curious.
As for what else I want from you?
He gestured to the house behind us. I'll tell you tomorrow at breakfast. For now, clean yourself up. Rest.
That rage flickered in his eyes again at the dress, the hair.
Take the stairs on the right, one level down. Your room is the first door.
Not a dungeon cell?
Perhaps it was foolish to reveal that fear, to suggest it to him. But Rhys half-turned, brows lifting.
You are not a prisoner, Feyre. You made a bargain, and I am calling it in. You will be my guest here, with the privileges of a member of my household. None of my subjects are going to touch you, hurt you, or so much as think ill of you here.
My tongue was dry and heavy as I said, "And where might those subjects be?"
"Some dwell here, in the mountain beneath us."
He angled his head.
"They're forbidden to set foot in this residence. They know they'd be signing their death warrant."
His eyes met mine, stark and clear, as if he could sense the panic, the shadows creeping in.
"Amarantha wasn't very creative," he said with quiet wrath. "My court beneath this mountain has long been feared, and she chose to replicate it by violating the space of Prithian's sacred mountain. So, yes, there's a court beneath this mountain. The court your Tamlin now expects me to be subjecting you to. I preside over it every now and then, but it mostly rules itself."
When are you taking me there?
If I had to go underground, had to see those kinds of horrors again, I'd beg him not to take me. I didn't care how pathetic it made me. I'd lost any sorts of qualms about what lines I'd cross to survive.
I'm not. He rolled his shoulders. This is my home, and the court beneath it is my... occupation, as you mortals call it.
I do not like for the two to overlap very often.
My brows rose slightly.
You mortals?
Starlight danced along the planes of his face.
Should I consider you something different?
A challenge.
I shoved away my irritation at the amusement again tugging at the corners of his lips, and instead said,
And the other denizens of your court?
The Night Court territory was enormous, bigger than any other in Prithian. And all around us were those empty, snow-blasted mountains. No sign of towns, cities, or anything.
Scattered throughout, dwelling as they wish. Just as you are now free to roam where you wish.
I wish to roam home.
Rhys laughed, finally sauntering toward the other end of the hall, which ended in a veranda open to the stars.
I'm willing to accept your thanks at any time, you know, he called to me without looking back. Red exploded in my vision, and I couldn't breathe fast enough, couldn't think above the roar in my head.
One heartbeat, I was staring after him. The next, I had my shoe in my hand.
I hurled it at him with all my strength, all my considerable, immortal strength.
I barely saw my silk slipper as it flew through the air, fast as a shooting star, so fast that even a High Lord couldn't detect it as it neared, and slammed into his head.
Rhys whirled, a hand rising to the back of his head, his eyes wide. I already had the other shoe in my hand.
Rhys's lips pulled back from his teeth.
I dare you.
Temper. He had to be in some mood today to let his temper show this much.
Good. That made two of us. I flung my other shoe right at his head, as swift and hard as the first one. His hand snatched up, grabbing the shoe mere inches from his face.
Rhys hissed and lowered the shoe, his eyes meeting mine as the silk dissolved to glittering black dust in his fist. His fingers unfurled, the last of the sparkling ashes blowing into oblivion, and he surveyed my hand, my body, my face.
Interesting, he murmured, and continued on his way. I debated tackling him and pummeling that face with my fists, but I wasn't stupid. I was in his home, on top of a mountain in the middle of absolutely nowhere, it seemed. No one would be coming to rescue me. No one was even here to witness my screaming. So I turned toward the doorway he'd indicated, heading for the dim stairwell beyond. I'd nearly reached it, not daring to breathe too loudly, when a bright, amused female voice said behind me, far away from wherever Rhys had gone to at the opposite end of the hall.
So that went well.
Rhys's answering snarl sent my footsteps hurrying. My room was a dream. After scouring it for any sign of danger, after learning every exit and entrance and hiding place, I paused in the center to contemplate where exactly I'd be staying for the next week. Like the upstairs living area, its windows were open to the brutal world beyond. No glass, no shutters, and sheer amethyst curtains fluttered in that unnatural, soft breeze. The large bed was a creamy, white and ivory concoction, with pillows and blankets and throws for days, made more inviting by the twin golden lamps beside it. An armoire and dressing table occupied a wall, framed by those glassless windows. Across the room, a chamber with a porcelain sink and toilet lay behind an arched wooden door. But the bath... the bath. Occupying the other half of the bathroom, my bathtub was actually a pool, hanging right off the mountain itself. A pool for soaking or enjoying myself, Its far edge seemed to disappear into nothing, the water flowing silently off the side and into the night beyond. A narrow ledge on the adjacent wall was lined with fat, guttering candles whose glow gilded the dark, glassy surface and wafting tendrils of steam. Open, airy, plush, and calm. This room was fit for an empress. With the marble floors, silks, velvets, and elegant details, only an empress could have afforded it. I tried not to think what Reese's chamber was like, if this was how he treated his guests. Guest, not prisoner. Well, the room proved it. I didn't bother barricading the door. Reese could likely fly in if he felt like it, and I'd seen him shatter a fairy's mind without so much as blinking. I doubted a bit of wood would keep out that horrible power. I again surveyed the room, my wedding gown hissing on the warm marble floors. I peered down at myself. "You look ridiculous." Heat itched along my cheeks and neck. It didn't excuse what he'd done. Even if he'd saved me, I choked on the word, from having to refuse Tamlin, having to explain. Slowly, I tugged the pins and baubles from my curled hair, piling them onto the dressing table. The sight was enough for me to grit my teeth, and I swept them into an empty drawer instead, slamming it shut so hard the mirror above the table rattled. I rubbed at my scalp, aching from the weight of the curls and prodding pins. This afternoon, I'd imagined Tamlin pulling the meat from my hair, a kiss for every pin. But now, I swallowed against the burning in my throat. Reese was the least of my concerns. Tamlin had seen the hesitation, but had he understood that I was about to say no? Had Ianthe? I had to tell him. Had to explain that there couldn't be a wedding, not for a while yet. Maybe I'd wait until the mating bond snapped into place, until I knew for sure it couldn't be some mistake that I was worthy of him. Maybe wait until he, too, had faced the nightmares stalking him. Relaxed his grip on things a bit, on me. Even if I understood his need to protect, that fear of losing me, perhaps I should explain everything when I returned. But so many people had seen it, seen me hesitate. My lower lip trembled, and I began unbuttoning my gown, then tugged it off my shoulders. I let it slide to the ground in a sigh of silk and tulle and beading, a deflated souffle on the marble floor, and took a large step out of it. Even my undergarments were ridiculous, frothy scraps of lace intended solely for Tamlin to admire and then tear into ribbons. I snatched up the gown, storming to the armoire and shoving it inside. Then I stripped off the undergarments and chucked them in as well. My tattoo was stark against the pile of white silk and lace. My breath came faster and faster. I didn't realize I was weeping until I grabbed the first bit of fabric within the armoire I could find, a set of turquoise nightclothes, and shoved my feet into the ankle-length pants, then pulled the short-sleeved matching shirt over my head, the hem grazing the top of my navel. I didn't care that it had to be some night court fashion. Didn't care that they were soft and warm. I climbed into that big, fluffy bed, the sheets smooth and welcoming, and could barely draw breath steady enough to blow out the lamps on either side. But as soon as darkness enveloped the room, my sobs hit in full. Great, gasping pants that shuddered through me, flowing out the open windows and into the starry, snow-kissed night. Reese hadn't been lying when he said I was to join him for breakfast. My old handmaidens from under the mountain appeared at my door just past dawn, and I might not have recognized the pretty dark-haired twins had they not acted like they knew me. I had never seen them as anything but shadows, their faces always concealed in impenetrable night. But here, or perhaps without Amarantha, they were fully corporeal.
Nuala and Caradwyn were their names, and I wondered if they'd ever told me, if I had been too far gone under the mountain to even care. Their gentle knock hurled me awake, not that I'd slept much during the night. For a heartbeat, I wondered why my bed felt so much softer, why mountains flowed into the distance and not spring grasses and hills. And then it all poured back in, along with the throbbing, relentless headache. After the second, patient knock, followed by a muffled explanation through the door of who they were, I scrambled out of bed to let them in. And after a miserably awkward greeting, they informed me that breakfast would be served in 30 minutes and I was to bathe and dress. I didn't bother to ask if Rhys was behind that last order, or if it was their recommendation based on how grim I no doubt looked, but they laid out some clothes on the bed before leaving me to wash in private. I was tempted to linger in the luxurious heat of the bathtub for the rest of the day, but a faint, endlessly amused tug cleaved through my headache. I knew that tug. Had been called by it once before, in those hours after Amarantha's downfall. I ducked my neck in the water, scanning the clear winter sky, the fierce wind whipping the snow off those nearby peaks. No sign of him. No pound of beating wings. But the tug yanked again in my mind, my gut. A summoning. Like some servant's bell. Cursing him soundly, I scrubbed myself down and dressed in the clothes they'd left. And now, striding across the sunny upper level as I blindly followed the source of that insufferable tug, my magenta silk shoes near silent on the moonstone floors, I wanted to shred the clothes off me if only for the fact that they belonged to this place, to him. My high-waisted peach pants were loose and billowing, gathered at the ankles with velvet cuffs of bright gold. The long sleeves of the matching top were made of gossamer, also gathered at the wrists, and the top itself hung just to my navel, revealing a sliver of skin as I walked. Comfortable, easy to move in, to run. Feminine, exotic. Thin enough that, unless Rhysand planned to torment me by casting me into the winter wasteland around us, I could assume I wasn't leaving the borders of whatever warming magic kept the palace so balmy. At least the tattoo, visible through the sheer sleeve, wouldn't be out of place here. But the clothes were still a part of this court. And, no doubt, part of some game he intended to play with me. At the very end of the upper level, a small glass table gleamed like quicksilver in the heart of a stone veranda, set with 3 chairs and laden with fruits, juices, pastries, and breakfast meats. And in one of those chairs, though Rhys stared out at the sweeping view, the snowy mountains near blinding in the sunlight, I knew he'd sensed my arrival from the moment I cleared the stairwell at the other side of the hall. Maybe since I'd awoken, if that tug was any indication. I paused between the last 2 pillars, studying the High Lord lounging at the breakfast table and the view he surveyed. "I'm not a dog to be summoned," I said by way of greeting. Slowly, Rhys looked over his shoulder. Those violet eyes were vibrant in the light, and I curled my fingers into fists as they swept from my head to my toes and back up again. He frowned at whatever he found lacking.
"I didn't want you to get lost," he said blandly.
My head throbbed, and I eyed the silver teapot steaming in the center of the table. A cup of tea.
"I thought it'd always be dark here," I said, if only to not look quite as desperate for that life-giving tea so early in the morning.
We're one of the three solar courts,